Hello, and welcome to Trust Radio, the investment trust podcast hosted by Janus Henderson Investors, where we take a deep dive into the questions investors really want to know the answers to. My name is Andrew Jaguri, and today I'm joined by Alex Crook, portfolio manager of the Bankers Investment Trust, to discuss how is navigating today's complex market environment, how companies are dealing with rising input costs, and the role diversification plays in a volatile market environment. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
After an exceptional 2021, markets have struggled so far in 2022. Concerns over the economic implications of the war in Ukraine and the prospect of high interest rates to combat inflation have all weighed on investor sentiment. How has the trust performed year to date, and how are you navigating this market environment?
Well, it's been a very humbling start to the year, I suppose, in many senses. Obviously, the conflict in Ukraine, very unsettling, you know, with some very difficult images. And the effects therein, from an economic point of view, quite profound, actually. And things, again, very difficult to model and very difficult to understand how that was going to be, and therefore how you'd set your investment strategy. And, you know, particularly around, obviously, a very sharp rise in energy prices. Energy is a key input, whether it's fuel, but into a lot of raw materials. And then obviously we're also seeing impact on food prices, which again is impacting consumer spending. So really the year to date, you know, we have seen very, very poor markets. You know, markets have come back, equity markets have fallen, bond markets have fallen. So a lot of investors have seen losses this year. You know, some of that was to be expected, I suppose, when we saw interest rates starting to increase. Principally, you know, UK put interest rates up, and now we've seen the Americans start to put interest rates up. And that's really to try and cool down some of the inflationary pressures. Some of those are related to Ukraine. Some of them are definitely coming out of COVID, where we're still seeing many of the logjam in terms of product, in terms of cars, manufacturing, semiconductors, just not getting through. So high demand plus not enough capacity to produce these things, leading to higher prices and central banks wanting to take some action therein. So I think some of this we had anticipated. You know, we did reduce exposure to some Asian markets. You know, we've been looking for more quality names that have more dependable earnings. But I would say it's been very challenging this year. We've you know, found the environment very difficult to invest in.
In such a difficult market environment, where are you finding opportunities? And are there any sectors or regions that you're divesting from because the outlook doesn't look favorable?
I think rising inflation was something I've been talking about for a couple of years, really, particularly relating around labor, the lack of mobility of labor, certainly through COVID, where it was difficult to travel. And also in terms of the economies growing and therefore using up a lot of the labor that was within those economies. So we've seen a shortage of obviously people to fill jobs. And then for that tends to be inflationary wages rising. So we've seen that for 2 or 3 years now, building steadily. COVID kicked it on a bit, without a shadow of doubt. And it certainly in terms of staff, you know, whether you're in the airline industry, got reemployed in other areas, it's difficult to drag people back. But I think the difference this year has been around inflation, as I mentioned earlier, in energy and food. And that's really beginning to reduce, you know, disposable income for a large portion of the world. And so where we've been trying to be more cautious then is those, you know, maybe the more larger purchase items, the more non-discretionary, as you say, so things you would maybe treat yourself to or bigger items, as people prioritize heating homes and food. So, you know, so those are the areas we've been looking at. We call them non-discretionary consumer products, but, you know, you say the more the higher end purchases. So trying to be a bit more careful in some of those areas, trying to be more careful where energy is a high input cost to the manufacturing process or to certain companies, again, trying to avoid those where it's just difficult to pass that on. And then generally being in price makers rather than price takers. So companies, you know, that produce sort of goods in a certain, I suppose, in a, you know, they're the best provider or low cost provider. They should prosper, relatively speaking, and trying to prioritize those companies rather than those that are struggling with price input inflation.
I think one of the interesting things you mentioned previously was that the UK has done reasonably well to begin the year, but however, you've been reducing exposure to the country. Why is that?
So the UK's done well, probably not because of the economy, if we're honest. It's more to do with the mix of stocks in the UK stock market. And they're very much characterized by being tending to have a big exposure to energy, which, you know, again, with the price rise, but then you maybe expose yourself to possible windfall gain taxes or windfall taxes as governments try and get some money back. So I think there's some challenges there in those elements. And then sterling, you know, UK currency there has fallen this year, as it has against the dollar. A lot of currencies, euro has fallen as well. The dollar's been very strong. And actually that falling currency helps international companies quoted in sterling. So we've seen some benefit in the stock market, I think, from, you know, maybe 5 or 6% of the relative performance of the UK is probably due to the currency depreciating a little. So it's done well, but not because of fundamentals is where I'm trying to get to. There's some other factors at play in here. And therefore, you know, we've got a high exposure, a global investment trust, bankers investment trust. Therefore, we're expected to invest all around the world. And we've got nearly 20% in UK market, which is relatively small. It's about 6% of the quoted market. So we've been, I think, using the strength. We've stayed in the market because we thought it was cheap. We thought with some good value stocks, they performed relatively well. And it's probably time to start taking some profits in those names.
A theme we've seen over the last few years has been that rotation between growth and value. However, as of late, value stocks have outperformed growth. And in the short to medium term, it looks like value might continue to outperform. How is this dynamic affecting the portfolio, given that some regions are weighted towards value, whilst others lean towards growth?
Well, I suppose we look back and say over the last 12 years or so since the financial crisis in 2009 or so, which created a lot of dislocation in the world, interest rates fell very sharply to get the world going again and producing goods. And we saw, you know, ultimately negative interest rates. That was all very positive for growth investment style because the growth stocks have a lot of their value in their, out into the distance, what we call the terminal value. So, you know, they're all about growth over a long period of time. And those falling rates correlated very well with that growth investment style performing exceptionally well. So we had almost a decade or so where growth has dominated. As you rightly say, I think going forward, will it be value over growth? I think the elements of value will do well. Others will struggle. We've still got great challenges in the high street in terms of, you know, digital providers, you know, online against high street. There are plenty of areas still where value, I think, is difficult to invest in. But I think we'll see a better balance between some growth sectors doing well, not all, some value sectors doing well, not all. We call this more blended, you know, market, a more blend mix. And we're seeing that, therefore, in what we're doing in bankers, where we're prioritizing a little bit more. The UK was quite value in us, has done well. Asia, we have a more value style, that's doing well. And we've dialed down, you know, the US market growth stocks that we've owned. So we've gone from, you know, we had 5 or 6 technology names in our top 10 3 or 4 years ago. There's only one today, which is really Microsoft. And, you know, trying to therefore focus on stocks that are more, you know, we own some railway line stocks, which are a bit more into more dependable growth, obviously high cost of fuel, more shipping maybe on railways. So trying to focus on some other elements of the economy, which are a little bit better value, but hopefully will give us that mix. So we're not swinging one way or the other. I'd say, look, we're blending just a bit more growth and value within the portfolio.
You touched on the war in Ukraine there, and one of the fallouts of that has been higher energy prices. Now, this consequently has pushed up input costs for a lot of businesses. How are your portfolio companies dealing with these rising costs?
Well, in the short term, it's extremely difficult to avoid them. You can't change the mix of assets or the way the company produces things in a short term. What it will do, I think, is drive hopefully longer term thinking, which is good. You know, again, both governments and companies are thinking, how can we have more renewables in our energy policy? How can we, you know, does that mean putting on, you know, solar panels to try and reduce energy consumption off the grid? And then how can we, you know, recycle things? So I think it's all going to end up with some good, you know, decisions and companies, but it's very difficult in the short term to avoid some of the consequences there. And the same on the side of the foods, you know, again, putting up the price of wheat, which, you know, Ukraine produce a lot of. If people can't afford wheat, they buy rice, they buy soybeans and other types of food stuff. So it's in the short term, it's just been very difficult and companies haven't been able to really avoid a lot of the price inflation. But I think over time, you'll see better longer term thinking in terms of avoiding these things. The other areas, I suppose, that we're also seeing is, you know, companies wanting shorter supply chains. So they want more of the goods that they use to manufacture things closer to them. And so we're seeing that as a positive, and that's helping some of our companies, certainly.
You invest across the market cap. Are you seeing a difference between how large and mid-cap stocks kind of deal with these rising cost pressures? And what are they ultimately saying about their dividends?
Actually, we're not seeing a huge amount. Normally, larger companies have a bit more flexibility to manufacture in different parts of the world, to source goods from different parts of the world. But, you know, energy is you know, almost a universal price. It's gone up. We're probably seeing US companies benefit a little bit easier or find life a little bit easier because obviously they're in US dollars. And I mentioned earlier again, the dollar's been very strong. So, you know, companies trying to purchase these goods in weak, relatively weaker currencies, whether that's the yen in Japan, Europe and the UK have struggled a bit more than US companies. So I think, you know, if there's one dynamic, the US seems to be coping a bit better with this. It produces, you know, enough food to feed its population, doesn't need to import food as well. And they produce a lot of energy. So I think that's the market that's, you know, actually performing better than most. But then the caveat to that is rates might have to go up a little bit higher to stoke off that demand. And how does the equity market cope with that? So, but I think between mid and small, not an awful lot of difference this time. Again, you know, I think they're all struggling and finding life a little bit difficult in the short term. But they'll be fine solutions. You always do with, you know, different mixes of your energy policy and other ways.
You talked about the US, but I think another market which has been quite topical is China. And its zero COVID policy has proven quite difficult to implement. I mean, as a result, we've seen fresh lockdown restrictions in Shanghai and Shenzhen, and they're quite critical to global supply chains. How are you investing in China at the moment?
Again, relatively cautiously. You know, we are focusing, you know, we've increased, I think, things like healthcare stocks, more defensive names in the portfolio. Traditionally, we had a lot more consumer goods and travel services. So again, you know, travel had worked very well for us sort of 17, 18. And then, you know, almost at the beginning of COVID, when it was clear that travel was going to stop, we reduced, you know, or actually sold out of most of those names. So the mix of what we own in China has changed over, you know, partly through COVID, as it did across the portfolio, where we focused on home delivery, companies that could prosper a little bit with the restrictions. In China, that's just lingered, as you say, lingered a little bit longer than other markets. And it's not quite clear when some of those lockdowns will change. You know, I can understand why they're being affected, but having that clarity to see when they'll ease those restrictions is currently a little bit difficult. But you know, the stock market itself has, you know, I think has still had many very interesting companies listed there that I think are definitely worth investing in. But yeah, the timing is a little bit more tricky at the moment for that market.
You touched on companies bringing certain production elements closer to home. Now, for some, they call that nearshoring or onshoring. What are your portfolio companies saying about supply chain resilience? And what are the advantages and disadvantages of nearshoring?
Well, some of the advantages are clear in terms of reducing, you know, transport issues, transport costs, having more reliance on the product arriving at the time you wanted to. Having more control over the manufacture of that product, because you may be, you know, maybe you've got half of that product, you know, you take rather than being a small player for a global company. So there's some positives. You know, it comes at a possibly a slightly higher cost because you haven't got the efficiencies of scale that some of the big multinationals have, maybe manufacturing in China and shipping around the world. So pros and cons. But I think at the end of the day, you will see in continual onshoring, as you call it. I think it's inevitable as companies just want the reassurance of that supply. And again, it's not bad. It produces jobs in more locations as well. You know, other markets will evolve as always. And I think, you know, there's probably more opportunities than negatives in it, ultimately. But back to some of my points again earlier, it just takes a little bit of time. You know, it's a 2 or 3 year period of changing of mentality and capital, you know, flows around the world. But I think I see it more positive than negative.
I think one key theme that people are talking about is deglobalization or the reduction of global trade. Now, this could have implications for investors beyond profitability. Now, that could lead to slow innovation cycles, for example, or reduced consumer choice or heightened geopolitical risk. How do you factor this into your investment thesis as a global portfolio?
If you look back at the statistics, global growth, you know, in terms of transportation and other elements did peak around about 2017. So it's something it's not new. It's something we've been living with in terms of that globalization. I think towards you know, the end and sort of mid-decade, the last decade, it was all about just sort of arbitraging wages, I suppose, and you know, to some extent also environmental standards, which is not what we want to see at all. It's not helping the world grow, actually. And I think, you know, those elements of where globalization is sort of paused, as it were, and it's not going backwards in a hurry, but it definitely peaked, are positive. I think, again, we should be paying good wages to people to allow them to have a good quality of life, and we should be looking after environmental standards and not shipping out production to somewhere that's easier, shall we say, to produce, you know, certain goods. So I think, again, I'm not worried by it, and again, your investment is still investment opportunities. At the end of the day, you know, we're capital allocators. Our job is to find interesting, growing companies that are going to prosper. And I still think there are many opportunities around that, despite that globalization theme, I suppose, sort of playing out and peaking, as it were.
One of the benefits of diversification is that it offers stable and consistent returns over the longer term, whilst tempering volatility within the portfolio. Has the diversified nature of the trust helped you smooth over performance over the last few years?
Without a doubt. I mean, I think what I like about investing in a global sense is there, you know, different economies, different sectors are on different cycles. You know, we're not all on a similar cycle. So as one area is prospering, and we've touched on it already, you know, maybe America's finding life a little bit easier, shall we say, with some of the challenges of inflation. And yet China is still following lockdown. Now that will change, and maybe US finds rates are 2 or 3%. You know, and actually it's a more tougher environment with the cost of capital rising. And at the same time, maybe China is coming out of lockdown, is growing its economy a bit quicker, as we saw, as Western economies grew again out of COVID lockdown. So there's always opportunities, I think, in the sense of a global investor to see where we can find interesting investments. And the same happens when you get down to a sector level as well. Different areas, again, provide different opportunities. So I think I love diversification. I think it's a great asset for these global funds. And as you say, it does dampen down some of the volatility we see when you've got a single focus, I think, in a fund.
Great. Alex, that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulatory record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 3594615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, Reg number 2606646, each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate in London, EC2M3AE. and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, and Henderson Management S.A. Reg Number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitmore, L1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson. Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Defensive stocks. A defensive stock is a stock that provides consistent dividends and stable earnings regardless of the state of the overall market. There is a constant demand for their products, so defensive stocks tend to be more stable during various phases of the business cycle. Inflation. The rate at which prices of goods and services are rising in an economy. The CPI and RPI are two common measures. Growth investing. Growth investors search for companies they believe have strong potential. Their earnings are expected to grow at an above average rate compared to the rest of the market, and therefore there's an expectation that their share price will increase in value. Nearshoring, the practice of transferring a business operation to a nearby country, especially in preference to a more distant one. Value investing. Value investors search for companies that they believe are undervalued by the market and therefore expect their share price to increase. One of the favorite techniques is to buy companies with low price to earnings ratios.